Everyone's asleep.
Welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening pleasure. My very special guests today are Joe Atwell and Ryan Gilmore, and we're going to be talking about Christianity and how it was an invented technique of mind control in and of itself. Joe Atwell is the producer and author of Caesar's Messiah. As a youth in Japan, Atwell attended a Jesuit military academy where most of the school day was spent studying Greek, Latin, and the Bible. In later years, he continued studying hundreds of books on the origins of Christianity, including the Dead Sea Scrolls. Together with Robert Eisman, Atwell wrote a paper on the actual dating of the scrolls. Atwell's book, Caesar's Messiah, The Roman Conspiracy to Invent Jesus, was published by Ulysses Press in 2006, becoming the best-selling work of religious history in the U.S. in 2007. Its German translation has also achieved number one bestseller status. So, Joe, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you for having me, and it's good to hear your voice again, Vinny.
You know, I like hearing my voice too. That's kind of why I become a radio show host. And Ryan, also welcome to you.
Hi, Vinny.
All right. So, Joe, if you wouldn't mind launching us off and taking this show where you'd like it to go.
Sure. Well, in the next month, October the 19th in London at the Conroy Theatre, we're going to be putting on a seminar. There'll be myself and other scholars. Ryan will be there, Ryan Gilmore, and we're going to be showing the Caesar's Messiah documentary, and we're going to be putting on a presentation of evidence showing that Christianity was in fact an invention of the Roman Caesars, and that even though it looks like a religion and people see it as such, in fact it is a propaganda device. That's really what it has been in effect, and that it was put on to the European mind to make the feudal system, which was a system of slavery that the Caesars enacted, have the appearance of being a religious system. In other words, the serfs, which is just another word for slaves, wouldn't rebel against the system because they believed that there was a religious basis for their servitude, that the head of the feudal system, which was the Pope, the Pontiff Maximus, was the representative of Jesus here on earth, and that therefore they had to follow his instructions. The title Pontiff Maximus was just one of the many titles that the Caesars held, and the location of the Vatican, the Palatine Hill, is where the actual palace of the Flavian Caesars was. So you can see that they set up their system of mind control and didn't even bother really to change the title that they held or where they lived. They just put it into effect and told everybody to shut up and obey. So
is this where the term is this where the term having a Flavian disregard for something comes from?
Yeah, I think it is, actually. So this is really what we're going to try to do, is just so, look, the religion is obviously fake. We can show it's fake. We can show the character Jesus Christ is fictional. And we can show that the Bible has a very destructive effect. Ryan will get into this a little bit later, but the Bible has a really destructive effect in that it brings sociopaths into a kind of justification for violence. This, you know, when you look at our history in a broad stroke, you can see this is in fact the case, that wherever this religion is, that you end up with these violent wars. And we also believe that the current situation with all of these endless wars in the Middle East, that at the basis of them, you're going to find the Bible. It may seem like there's oil and all these other issues, and they are there. They are real issues. But one of the very fundamental issues is just this false history that the Bible continues to confuse people with. It's sort of like when you put bad information into a computer and then hundreds of instruction sets later, it just continues to misfunction. It doesn't matter what you do, the darn thing just won't put out good data. Our minds are like that, Vinny. We just have so much bad information inside of us that we can't think clearly about how government operates and about the motivations for government.
Computer programmers have a saying, it's called garbage in, garbage out. Doesn't matter what you put into the computer, if it's garbage, doesn't matter. You won't get anything good out of it.
Right.
Well, one of the garbage programs or viruses is the idea that God writes books. And as soon as that idea is accepted, what do people do with the contradictions in the Bible? What do people do with the range, the wide range of moral behavior displayed in the Bible? People will do different things with it. But one of the things that happens is this kind of deification of the psychopathic parts of the Bible that people find it hard to criticize, especially Christians who know from the story that, you know, Jesus was a practicing Jew and he revered parts of the Hebrew Bible. And there's a contradiction there. If this very model of spirituality admired the Hebrew Bible, and that has very psychopathic parts to it, like genocide, calling for genocide, killing children. It's hard to reconcile that if you think God wrote the Bible. I'd like to see more people seeing that spirituality comes from within. I mean, a book can inspire that spirituality, but to totally externalize it and put it on a book isn't serving this culture anymore.
I've always wondered, where's the integrity, the intelligence, and the forethought to base your entire life upon the writings of a singular book?
Yeah, well, there just isn't any, and it's just bad thinking from the very beginning. The way that was achieved was by stating that the book came from God, and therefore you shouldn't look at other books because this is the book that came from God. But if you actually have a focused analysis of the material in the Bible, you'll see that, as Ryan pointed out, that much of it is literally psychopathic. So this can't be coming from God. It's impossible. It's contradictory. So since the book doesn't come from God, it comes from men. And therefore, your point that you shouldn't base your life upon it is absolutely correct, and it's the only logical way to approach the situation. Just going back to when the U.S. got into this absolute catastrophe in the Middle East, which was supposed to be over quickly and now has led to a point where World War III is literally on the table and no end in sight, of course, to the conflict. If you remember back, way back when, to 2001, when Bush started all this activity, he used the Bible as his primary basis. Bush actually went to the French prime minister at the time, which name was Chirac, and said that you needed to be part of this war because it was Gog and Magog. Now, Chirac smiled politely and nodded, and when Bush left, he turned to his colleague and said, "What was that? What was he talking about?" He had no idea. They had to go and get a Bible scholar. And this was reported in a number of French newspapers, and I believe German newspapers as well, but it never got into the U.S. media for some reason. But what the Bible scholar told Chirac was, it appears that the American president believes that the Book of Revelation's prophecy, which end up with the apocalypse and the population of the planet being reduced to 144,000, that this war in the Middle East is going to lead to the second coming of Jesus and the apocalypse. Now, this was well vetted. In other words, this wasn't just a rumor, but it actually was corroborated in a journalistic fashion, and appears to be true. It was never denied by the U.S. press corps that surrounds the president. And yet it is absolutely clear grounds for removing Bush on the grounds he's insane. But this couldn't occur in the United States because you would have had to have cut across the bias that the Bible is the word of God, and that you would have offended all of the millions of people that actually do believe the book is, in fact, somehow divinely inspired. And so, therefore, these wars began, and now here we are today with so many boats, men of war in the Mediterranean Ocean, that you could walk from Cyprus to the shores of Syria without getting wet. If one of them has some kind of computer glitch, then World War III breaks out. And it all began because we didn't have the system and the courage to say, you know, people that believe in this stuff are nuts. And this is just crazy. And what we're looking for are politicians that want to put off the apocalypse, not ones that want to help bring it about.
What, Joe, what would you say to the objection that, well, what George Bush was talking about, that's not true Christianity?
Well, I would say that it's just easy to always cherry pick what Christianity is. I think we need as citizens to just judge it as it has existed historically and as it has affected us as a historical element. And that is, in fact, as a catastrophe.
Can I interject here something? Because this reminds me, oh, so many times of the debate of, oh, but that's not real socialism.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, well, you exterminated a whole bunch of people in China, exterminated a whole bunch of people in Cambodia, exterminated a whole bunch of people in Russia. Oh, but that's not real socialism.
We just haven't done socialism correctly yet.
Yeah. So,
that's
so
the objection, right?
So would it be fair to say that we haven't done Christianity correctly yet, even though it's got a playbook?
Right. And the thing is that, we must judge these social programs by their effect, particularly when they have a history. And in Christianity's case, it's just been an absolute catastrophe. It was the mind control device of the feudal system. It lasted for over 1,000 years. It literally operated as the enslavement device for the entire European population. And this is for 1,000 years.
I'd like to read a quote. Joe, sorry. I'd like to read a quote from the book Lost Science of Money by Stephen Zarlinga. This is a really good quote concerning literalism and the Bible. Quote, "Looking at the Bible as the literal word of God inevitably limits the mind's ability to use the full methodology available to human beings for gaining knowledge. One must not surrender one's mind and soul in that way, no matter what the promised benefits. The mind must never be abandoned, neither to superstition nor to any seductive ism claiming to offer salvation in alternative form." Unquote.
Yeah.
What is salvation? What is it to be saved?
Yeah, it's seductive, this external savior. And I think that a lot of people project their spirituality onto the Jesus character, and they give Jesus too much credit for something that's coming from within. And because they externalize it, they're giving over, as Zarlinga says here, surrendering one's mind and soul.
So does that mean if people actually, instead of operating under the belief that, say, Jesus was real and he did all this stuff and he was the son of God and he was the only one that could do that, if they say Jesus was an example of what human beings are capable of and you can do it too if only you actually really went hardcore and started practicing and doing so on and so forth, would that make a difference?
No. The idea that an individual could have a wonderful spiritual experience with Christianity is not what we're debating. It's whether or not it is a tool that government can use. The individual experiences with Jesus are, from a political and historical perspective, just irrelevant. What difference does it make? I mean, there are wonderful spiritual experiences with every religion, because there are, in fact, individuals who are going to have these spiritual moments. And if whether or not they are Islam or Hindu or...
or even just using magic mushrooms.
I mean, though that isn't the question. The question is how does a religion operate politically? What is, and particularly in the case of Christianity, is what is it doing now politically? What effect has Christianity had on the situation in the Middle East? And I think that any clear-minded description of that would indicate it has been very instrumental in creating a situation that is literally catastrophic. So those who want to have these moments with Jesus, please do so. But for the rest of us who are worried about the existence of humanity, we have this other problem, in that the religion, it can be used and has been used and is being used as a political tool to justify this kind of really destructive behavior. So we want to expose the religion's origin so that the way that it has been used politically will be clear to people, and that therefore they will know how to prevent it from having effect in our current political situation.
Well, this is the reason why the Founding Fathers decided to separate church and state, maybe because they feared the possibility of the church taking over the country.
Well, that, and of course, because it makes people, balls crazy. And then you have this irrational component. I mean, look, civilization is very fragile. And the more murderous or crazy impulse that has, entered into the minds of the constituents who make up the democratic vessel that we all share, means the more polluted it is and the worse the result of the government becomes. And I think that Ryan's point is really profound, that the Bible attracts sociopaths.
Well, let's get into this more after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and we'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com is where you can find the archives to this one. I want to jump it. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening pleasure. Now, of course, the intent of the show is not to offend people or anything of that nature. It's just to really give you the perspective from a lot of different points of view, because it's only if you listen to many, many different points of view and lots of different frames of references that you get something called perspective. If you don't have perspective, you probably won't know where you're going in life. My very special guests are Joe Atwell and Ryan Gilmore. And you had a point that you made over the break, is that you don't want to just specifically bag Christianity, but all the Abrahamic religions. Abrahamic, ladies and gentlemen, is something that you lash between two trees and lie on while you're having a religious ceremony, by the way. So anyway, what was this about the Abrahamic religions you wanted to talk about, Ryan?
Well, Joe was talking a lot about Christianity, and I think it would be good for Joe to talk about the context of, in his theory, where Christianity came from and what the Romans were concerned about at the time.
Right. Well, Rome was battling a messianic movement in the first century. This is really what was the basis for the religion that we know of, Christianity. They attempted to essentially tone down a xenophobic and militaristic version of Christianity and replace it with one that could essentially just exist within the Roman Empire. And this kind of goes to the heart of the problem that, that even today we're seeing with Christianity, is that you can see in the Hebrew Bible and in the Dead Sea Scroll literature, the literature of the Messianic movement that was fighting against Rome in the first century, you can see many examples of a sort of clear-minded heroism in the face of overwhelming colonization and of overwhelming, you know, just military force to occupy your land. But the problem is that the literature comes from warfare. Even long before the Romans showed up in Judea, the Hebrew Bible documents battles between the Philistines and the people who lived in Jericho, and there was this constant warfare that the Israelites were engaged in, and always there was justification in the literature for their taking Gentile slaves, for revenge against the Gentiles, and basically, this is so chronic throughout the literature that if someone has psychopathic tendencies, that the literature itself creates justification for it. Now, moving forward in the New Testament, in the story that the Romans developed about Jesus, you have exactly the same thing, except now it's the Jews are the bad guys and the Gentiles are the ones who are given a kind of justification for violence against Jews. And in the New Testament, probably the most influential statement in it is where the Jews demand that Jesus will be crucified. They force the Roman magistrate Pontius Pilate into doing it, even though he's trying to wash his hands and get away from the act. And the Jews cry out that his blood will be on our hands and on our children's hands. Now, that lovely sentiment was placed by the Romans into the book, and throughout history has been a justification for sociopaths to kill Jews, just in the same way that the material in the Hebrew Bible has been justification for Jews to feel no concern whatsoever if it's only Gentiles that they're doing financial or physical damage to. These are the sociopaths I'm referring to. Going forward into the Quran, I'll just let the Islamic scholars deal with that on their own. But I would say that it needs to have some explanation as far as the military activity of the purported leader. And I think that just any real review of the Abrahamic traditions in general will see that it has produced a justification for war more often than it does anything else. So I think that that's why the work that we're trying to bring forward in London at the venue on the 17th at the Conroy Theater.
Sorry, the 19th at Conway Hall.
At Conway Hall, will hopefully be seen as both timely, if the world is not destroyed by then, and also interesting and valuable, that people will be able to come away from the event thinking more clearly about the present, because they'll have a better understanding of how governments use these mind control devices to justify warfare.
Is this part of the human race kind of history? Is the only people that actually want to justify warfare are the ones who are freaking psychopathic killers who want to get something out of it. Nobody actually else, like ordinary, decent people. They just want to kind of stay home, raise their families. And it's always the people that own everything and think that they own you. They want to send everybody to war to die.
Yeah, that's just so true. And that attitude, the attitude of the elite that wants to control the mass because they want complete control over the money and on the land, and they want this kind of oligarchic power, that's what has produced our religious literature. You see the problem? It always has been the case that it comes from the sociopaths. And therefore, it is just like a lump of bad thinking that infests every single individual that comes in contact with it. And when Ryan and I were first talking about this, Ryan explained a lot of research that he has done to me that connects that shows how the sociopath connects to the Bible, to the entire Bible. I was wondering if you'd actually comment on that, Ryan.
Well, the way I see it, it's the Old Testament is a very political document. Joe's work, he's showing that the New Testament came out of a time of war, even though it's full of these nice pastoral scenes of shepherds and people going across the countryside. But this was a time of violent war. And we have a case that looks like an early example of controlled opposition. So as always, a controlled opposition has to look attractive to anyone rebelling against the current power structure. And so the Romans looks like they went through incredible lengths to pacify this messianic movement. And again, the Messiah, what we think of today as Messiah, we associate it with Jesus Christ, in most of Western culture, and not knowing that the Romans reversed the meaning of that word. To the Jews of the first century, a Messiah is a warrior king who defeats his enemies through the power of God. And this idea inspired a lot of rebellious Jews, and by some estimates, they were 10 to 15% of the Roman Empire. So to the Romans, this was a huge threat to their power. And maybe you can explain, Joe, there was perhaps maybe four attempts to take over Judaism.
Right. It's sort of interesting. People look at Christianity as like this novel thing that just sort of emerged in the first century. But actually, it was at least the third attempt to restructure the Jewish religion into a form that it could abide with inside the Roman Empire. The first effort was by the family of Herod, and the Herods are famous. They're in the New Testament. They're described quite often, and they were Rome's tax collector of Judea. And the family was originally Greek and Gentile, but they saw that there was problems ruling the Jewish population because the Jews did not like their ethnicity and religion. So they converted to Judaism, but that didn't work either. And so what they did was to take Maccabean brides. Now, the Maccabees were the family that had set up the Jewish state in the second century BC, and the one that had been deposed by the Roman Empire. And so when they took Maccabean brides, they were essentially trying to breed a Christ. In other words, they would, because the Jewish people looked through the maternal lineage, they would look to these people who had been born of Maccabean brides to inherit fathers. They would look at them as legitimate kings of Judea. But this just didn't work, and the rebellions broke out and just kept on coming. And so another family, just by amazing circumstance, which had to be Rome's tax collector in Egypt, family is called the Alexanders, then they began to produce a literature which was written by this guy named Philo, Philo Alexander, who wrote a kind of watered down Judaism. In other words, he took out the violent messianic parts of the literature and put in place these Hellenized pro multiculturalism and rationalism philosophies. And so Philo is seen as having blended Hellenism with Judaism. And this literature was then circulated, but again, it just didn't work. The rebellions against Rome broke out essentially in the year one. In other words, the very first year that, according to the Bible's chronology, that Jesus was in existence, that was when a guy named Judas the Galilean created a rebellion in Galilee, which, of course, is where Jesus is supposedly from. And they began fighting against the Roman Empire. And these rebellions never really stopped. The rebellions continued throughout the first century and then ended up with an enormous nationwide rebellion that broke out in 66. It was led by a messianic movement. This was the national messianic movement. So no matter what the New Testament claims in terms of a Christian messianic organization, the national movement was militaristic. It was led by a Christ who would have been a warrior. They drove Rome out. They set up a nation state, and the rebellion finally came under control with the famous mass suicide at Masada in 73. But this wasn't the end of it. The Messianic movement broke out another rebellion in 115. They essentially drove Rome completely out of the breadbasket of Egypt. They slaughtered all of the Gentiles in the islands of Crete and Rhodes. I believe that Tacitus put the number at over a quarter million, right? So this movement was very serious and very powerful and was genocidal against the Gentiles. Rome eventually put this rebellion down, but it just broke out again, 133. Again, this was in Judea. The rebellion took control of the nation. They again set up a nation state, were minting their own coins, had their own government. And this led to the Bar Kokhba battle, which was the most violent battle that Rome ever had. They lost so many Roman troops in the struggle that it was the only time in the history of the Roman Empire that the salutation of a returning general wasn't given. And that salutation was that we hope Caesar is well, and if Caesar is well, the troops and the general is well. And this would be something the general would say to Caesar when he came up. And they didn't give it because they were afraid that if they made the statement the troops are well, there was so many citizens that had lost sons in the war that there would be a civilian rebellion of the Roman population against the Caesars. So that's how brutal these wars were.
So they were very motivated, and because fighting them on the battlefield wasn't completely working, they had to get into the Jews' minds.
Right. And so that's what happened. That's why that was the motivation to try to create a version of the Messianic Judaism that was the Messiah would just say, turn the other cheek and give to Caesar what is Caesar's. It was really that simple.
Can I ask as well? Actually, we're coming to break. I'll save my question for after that one. When we talk about religion, when we talk about the past, people don't realize that history is written by the victors, and so are its religious texts, aren't they?
Right.
You know, it's pretty straightforward, isn't it? He who controls the past controls the present.
Yeah, after the break, I want to go into that for a second. Yeah.
All right. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere.
The world we knew is gone. The conditions which framed and taught us our status have gone. Our needs are now different, and our aims The condition which framed it and told us our standards have gone wrong. The world we knew is gone.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guests are author of Caesar's Messiah, Joe Atwill, and his accomplice and surrogate. I think surrogate's not the right word. Ryan Gilmore, anyway. And we want to talk about the historical context. Those who control it, those who rewrite history for their own ends so that they can manipulate people into being slaves. Joe. Go for your life.
Yeah, I'm just going to point out that, Jesus makes all these predictions about what will occur. He says the Galilean towns are going to be crushed. He says that Jerusalem's going to be encircled with a wall, and he says the temple's going to be razed, and that the abomination of desolation that Daniel predicted is going to actually come to pass. And he says, this is all going to take place before the generation I'm talking to passes away. So in other words, 40 years, that's the length of time for a generation in this era. And you see, when you talk about the victors writing history, what Jesus is predicting are all military victories. He even gives the exact date that these military victories will occur. His ministry is between 30 and 33, and the war that he's talking about is between 70 and 73. So you have to ask yourself, well, who actually wrote this literature? Typically, when you've got military victories, it's the victors that write it. That's just the straightforward, ordinary way of understanding our history. The defeated didn't get a chance to write it because they were defeated and they vanished, typically. So when you look at the Christian story, the story of Jesus, the first thing that someone should be suspicious about is that it's all about war victories. And when you then look at, well, who had the motivation, the opportunity, capacity, it turns out that the victors of these war battles were the individuals that had these attributes, that they did have the motivation, they did have the opportunity, and they did have the capacity to produce the literature. So rather than seeing the Jesus story as, coming from the Romans as being something that's far-fetched, the fact is that any honest forensic analysis of it, looking at it like you would literature that had just come out of, from unknown provenance, the first thing that would pop to your mind, the most obvious explanation is that, well, this was written by the victors. That all of the individual that won all these battles, that they produced this prophet, and he predicted their victories.
The story we're told is that Christianity, or the Roman Empire was against Christianity, and they persecuted Christians. And but eventually, the royal family in Rome was. Became Christians themselves and became state religion of the empire. So it's if you know the real history of the era, which isn't represented in the New Testament, you have a contradiction because it was a time of a great struggle between Rome and the Jews. And knowing that, it's a contradiction that the imperial family in Rome would start to take up the religion of their enemies, a version of Judaism. And especially with the family tree that Joe points out in Caesar's Messiah, is that the first pope that appears in history was Caesar Vespasian's great-great-nephew. One of the first Christian martyrs, Clemens, was Vespasian's great-nephew. The first Christian catacomb that we have actual inscriptions of, which is created by Flavia Domitella. That's Vespasian's granddaughter. So we have a very tight circle of family members becoming the first Christians. And so if Rome was at war with the Jews at the time, it's very strange, if that's true, that all these members of the royal family would convert to Christianity.
Yeah, it is very odd, isn't it? In fact, it's just preposterous.
Joe, you kind of breaking up just a little bit there, but there was a point that I wanted to make. There's been a lot of people claiming that many hundreds, even thousands of passages in the Bible that have been claiming to predict the future have in fact come true. I was just wondering whether or not those bits were added in after the fact to give it credibility.
Well, certainly all of the prophecies of Jesus were simply written after the war. And in fact, scholars are in complete agreement, or virtually complete agreement, that the Gospels were written following the Roman War for the simple reason that the events of the Roman War are found inside the Gospels. And since people cannot see in the future, there is simply no other explanation for the literature except that it was written after the war. So this is just a common technique, as you pointed out, of other authors wanting to seem important or connected to God. And it's the most natural and commonsensical way to simply understand the Gospels. That
I don't think we should automatically dismiss precognition. When you're looking at these things, it's just you could set that aside and say, well, let's look for evidence, the down-to-earth evidence first. You know, if we can't find any evidence that that the book was simply written after the events that they to prophesize, let's check if that if there's evidence for that first. And if there isn't, well, maybe then we can start investigating.
Yeah, I mean, what I would do is say, look, if this is actually somehow divinely connected, then it should be just a no-brainer for the Pope to be able to come and to help me with the racing form tomorrow. He should be able to pick every single winner. The fact is, he can't pick any. He can't help my gambling addiction at all because he can't see into the future. So,
and actually, Joe shows that the Romans examined the Jewish literature. They actually destroyed the temple, temple in Jerusalem, stole the Torah, locked it away in the palace, and studied it. This is in Josephus. And they looked at the literature of so many Jewish scholars trying to predict the future with the patterns in the Hebrew Bible. And we think they thought this was funny and ridiculous and contrary to reason.
Yeah, they didn't believe you could see into the future. And they thought that the Messianic Jews' belief in prophecy was absurd. And in fact, that the whole idea of these prophets that are essentially the primary writers of the Hebrew Bible, which is these prophets talking about things that will occur in the future, that this was absurd. And so the character Jesus Christ is created by the Romans as an improvement over what they see as these absurd Jewish prophets, in that everything that Jesus predicts comes true. Now, of course, to create a true prophet, you have to write one that's writing about things that have already happened. So that's, you can kind of start to structure how the character is developed just step by step by Rome. He's just a version of the prophets that they saw inspiring the Jews to rebel. And he's an improvement. Jesus gets every single one of his prophecies right. What was going on in the Dead Sea Scrolls are prophecies that show the Jews would be defeating the Roman Empire. That's how they were interpreting it. And so Rome just said, well, this literature is not in our interest, and so we need to replace it. And so the Gospels were produced, and it just shows that all of these prophecies that the Jews thought were going to give them a ruler that would defeat the Romans actually can be seen to have predicted the Romans themselves as the divine ruler that the Jews are supposed to worship. I mean, really, if you just look at it from a distance, Christianity is just another version of the imperial cult. The Caesars were always adopting the gods of the regions they conquered and taking on the identities of Vespasian, who was a Caesar that was the father of Titus, the individual who produced the Gospels. Vespasian, when he came to Alexandria, he goes into a temple of Artemis, I believe, and he comes out as the new Artemis. He comes out being able to work miracles, being able to see into the future. I mean, he just becomes this local god. So the reason that the Romans, tweaked this character, was just... this was just a tradition that they always had, and it was just one of the mind control devices that Rome used to rule the provinces. They just...
What's interesting is when you're talking about this, about how the rulers would come in, embody certain gods, adopt local customs and beliefs and so on and so forth in order to rule over them, it reminds me exactly of what Alexander the Great did. That's precisely what he did. He went to the oracles around Alexandria, and they said, "Oh, you're this great person." He comes out claiming to be all this stuff that they all prophesized and what have you. And lo and behold, they name Alexandria after him, build this big ass freaking library, which the Romans took all the important books out of and burned the rest, so that nobody would know their real history or the truth about what BS that they were shilling people in order to control them. We'll be right back after the break.